Welcome to Paint Radio with your hosts, Andrew Dwyer and Kevin Hoffman.
Let's do a podcast, Paint Radio, the APC podcast. I'm Andrew Dwyer. Kevin Hoffman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
You know, this is not why I hired you, but it is an enormous benefit because your bachelor's degree is in philosophy, and I love that about you. And one of, I'm an English major, and we're taught to avoid cliches, but at the same time, there's a difference between a cliche and an idiom or a saying. And one of my favorite sayings is youth is wasted on the young, because, and I think we generally think of that as from a health standpoint, which is certainly true. You can get away with anything. You can stay out all night drinking, which, you know, you can do when you're older. It's just there are more ramifications, let's face it. But I also think your time frame is so great when you're young. And this is why the phrase, you know, what would you have told your younger self, or what do you wish you knew back when you started? And I think the reason that's so great is because, good Lord, there's just, it's so hard to learn anything without living it. And so your parents, older peers, coworkers can tell you things, advise you of things. But man, when we're young, we just don't listen enough. Would you completely disagree, or would you agree, Kevin?
No, I think that's a good point. I think being young in life is similar to being young in business, which is to say, when you first start out, you've got endless energy. You can throw yourself at every problem. As you get older, you start to be more concerned with risk management. You start to be more concerned with creating a repeatable process that's not going to keep you up at night. And so that's one of the biggest things a young person can do in their maturation is cross that Rubicon and start being able to strategically plan.
Listeners and viewers, I don't know if you're aware of what Kevin just did, but you should be. He's basically doing a masterful segue into the topic of this podcast, because we're talking about goal setting and strategic planning. And I feel like, certainly as a young business owner, as a young contractor, for most people, that's not something they're naturally inclined to do. And I think it's also safe to say that for many younger contractors, and again, this is not a stereotype, it's a generalization, which are two different things. Generalization is generally or often true. It doesn't have to be true that you think, I know what I'm doing. I don't need to set goals. I don't need to plan. I kick ass every day. My plan is to kick ass because I'm an ass kicker. And that's a wonderful thing, which is also that sort of youthful exuberance is both wonderful and unfortunate for young people. But I think contractors, as they evolve, as they become more humble and objective and open to advice, they start hearing what other people are doing or how did you get to where you are. And man, a lot of times it starts with goal setting and strategic planning. That's why we're so excited to have on the podcast today, Chris Elliott. He's the president and CEO of Onnit Painting in beautiful Indianapolis. And I'll tell you right now, if you don't know Chris, one of the things I love about Chris is that he's so sincere and curious. And curiosity, I'm convinced, is one of the superpowers of humans. That when we're curious, it automatically keeps us humble. We're confident and we're proud of what we've done. But man, we're eager to learn what the next great thing is. And you want to surround yourself with curious people who are willing to share their experience, but also really interested to hear your own experience. That is Chris Elliott. Sorry to shower you with so much praise, Chris. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Keep it coming. What a great segue and introduction. I appreciate it. Excited to be here with you, Andrew and Kevin.
Heck yeah. So goal setting and strategic planning, there's lots of different ways to do that. I guess there are some, I wouldn't say bad ways. There might be some easier, more effective ways. But today we want to talk about how you do it, what your approach is to goal setting and strategic planning. So it's a very broad sort of opening, but sure. Give us an insight, Chris, as to how you approach that process.
Yeah. And you guys, in your introduction, you touched on this. It's evolved over time, of course, you know, as we were a young company and as I was early into this. And by the way, I think it's very good that you start you typically start a business fairly naive, just as you are young in life. and it does, it, you know, as you grow and mature, you evolve and, you become more aware and maybe gain a little wisdom along the way. But yeah, so you know, I feel like goal setting for me is always something that was fairly intuitive, something that I thought was important, and I've always done it. But I feel like as our business has evolved, it's definitely gotten better. I've understood it better, and then the process of getting you know, setting our goals. Come from a very you know, very productive place as far as I feel like 10 years in, we'll be 10 years in April, we understand our business very well, and in understanding our business very well, we also understand where we want to take the business, we understand the vision very well, and so our goal setting is all formed off of the vision, and that we really create the strategic framework for our organization off our vision. Right. So the vision gives us an aim, and then the aim gives us something to focus on. And we basically just reverse engineer it from there all the way down to the, you know, what are we setting as a, what's the next 10 years look like? Let's just say an aspirational directional goal for the organization. And that just, like, you know, not, we don't have to make it tactical because it's probably not where we'll end up, but it just creates focus. Then we bring that down even closer, and then we will we'll look at what 3 years looks like, and then that we do add some detail, and then we do that, make that a bit more tactical. Then we create our 1 year goals that are obviously very tactical, and then we break that down and we try to create a 90 day world for our organization and our team members. What do we got to do in the next 90 days? What would be a, you know, 3 to 7 goals, 3 to 7 priorities that would move us towards our 1 year? And what are the 3 to 7 things we need to do in that 1 year goal setting that would move us to the 3 years? And what are we going to do in that 3 years that would move us to the 10 years? And then ultimately move us to that ambitious, aspirational vision of the organization. So that's kind of like the high level, but we start with the vision and we just keep kind of bringing it back down. And then we tie it into our meeting cadence. So then we're meeting on a very regular basis. We're touching on what are these quarterly goals that we set for our organization? And maybe we expand upon that. It's like, you know, you could go division, so residential, commercial, even down to functions of the business or departments, sales, ops, admin, finance, however works for your organization. And I think it's different at different stages of the organization. But in that weekly meeting cadence, we're touching on it, because we all know, you know, you set your goals, your 12-month goals, and they're very easily forgotten, right? So you need to kind of work it on. So you're visiting them frequently, and then you're setting actions on a weekly or monthly basis to move you towards those.
That's a lot to drill down on, and we're going to do as the podcast goes forward. But I want to take it back to something you just mentioned, which is in the beginning, you didn't really have that sense of goal setting. So I'd like to hear a little bit about how that evolution happened. Was it 2 years, 3 years? At what point did you say, I need to take this bull by the horns? What did it look like before? What did it look like after? And what were some of the immediate steps you were able to take if, for example, a contractor's in that same situation you were in at 2 years or three?
Sure. Yeah, great question. So I think early, like for us, it was as simple as just setting a forecast or like a revenue goal. It's like we want to get to 1 million. Right. And so we didn't drill down even beyond that. It was just like, we have a goal of getting to 1 million. Maybe we didn't take the time to establish like what the key drivers to get there would be, right? It was just like, we got to get to 1 million. And like, that was all over. And it's simple in the first year, right? It's like, it really is. It's just like lead gen, sales, production, and hopefully you're, you know, managing your finances, right? It does get more sophisticated as the business evolves and grows. And I think that, like, and we weren't distributing the goals amongst team members. Like, it was just kind of like 1 and 2 goals that we were working towards. As we progressed, as the business evolved, that goal setting process did get more refined. It's funny, I read the book Traction in 2015, the year I started my business, thought I was smarter than the book. And I was like, I don't need that. Took a couple things. you know, kept me on. And that, you know, is like most books, like when I consumed it, I don't think I was quite ready for it. Right. And so then I came back to it at a different time and it meant something to me when I came back to it. So I came back to it in 2019. And at that point we had kind of built our residential division to it, to the point that to the initial vision of like, once we get to 3 million or break 3 million, then we want to start laying in commercial. So that was kind of the initial aim for the business. And at that point, like we had enough team member, we start bringing people in, it complicates things. And so I was in the need of something, revisited Traction, read it again. And decided that it was what we needed at the time. So we implemented it into our business over like a 6-month period. And I really stayed committed to like doing it very textbook. And we've been doing that since 2019. Now that we did it textbook year over year over year, we have kind of let it evolve and put our own little spin on some things. So, but in my goal setting process, in my, there's definitely like it, EOS is woven into that, which is the entrepreneurial operating system that is really what the book Traction's about.
Oh, so many. Okay. We are going to, this is not going to be a 3-hour podcast. We're going to focus.
I will spend 3 hours with you guys if you want it.
No, this isn't Joe Rogan.
Exactly. I might have to get a cocktail, but
so many things you say. So kind of a 2-part question here. One, and I've said this a lot on this podcast, I love how people even, and I think the first time I noticed this was with Jordan Spieth, the golfer, when he's getting interviewed and he's talking about his game, he always says we and our, he never says I and me. And of course, sometimes it literally is us or we, because it takes a group to do X, to move the freight. But I think more importantly, it's more of a mindset change among people. They stop viewing themselves as a single individual, and it's about the team. So again, 2-part question. One, who is the we and the are that you're referring to? But also, to what extent do you think the goals are driven by revenue versus maybe profitability? Because revenue is like, hey, I want to get bigger. Profitability could be described as I want to get better, right? I want to get more efficient. I want to grow by becoming more efficient and more profitable. And by doing that, I will just, the natural byproduct of that organic evolution is to get bigger. So it's kind of in the weeds, but man, you're the type of guy who loves to be in the weeds because you can always get out, both of you. So who's the we, and how much does revenue drive goal setting?
Yeah. Great question. So for us at this point of our business, not everyone's involved in the strategic planning and the goal setting at the company or divisional level, but everybody is involved. It cascades all the way down, right? So our leadership team, so what it looks like for our organization annually is a 2-day planning session. And that is like, it's leadership team. So that's anyone that would be at the, let's say they're leading a function of the business, like a sales manager, production manager, operations manager, office manager. And so we would all come together. Our agenda is broken up between 2 days. The biggest chunk of the first day is spent in reviewing and reflecting on the previous year. And that's spent in, so prior to that, my wife is in the business with me. She's our director of finance admin, and she does a good amount of our marketing and execution. And so her and I come together, we drill down in the financials. So we have a fractional CFO. We spend a half day with our fractional CFO. And you know, I would say if my weakness in our business and probably where I lack interest is the financials. So we hire a fractional CFO because it's a weakness and something that's very important. And he's, because it's a weakness and I don't have a ton of interest, or I'm gaining interest, but he actually extracts the data from our P&L. he's created like a financial model and like made it fun for me, right? So he like color codes everything, and like I want to see a lot of green, right? And I don't want to see a lot of red. Green means we did better than last year. Red means we did worse than last year. And so that's been a way, like finding a way that's made it, you know, meaningful and fun for me, because I think the reason why I'm not interested is just like a lagging indicator or a lagging result, I should say, of a lot of other stuff, right? So so we do that. We do the meeting with our CFO, that's Emily and I, and then we meet, you know, among ourselves with the financials. We're typically looking, you know, obviously revenue, we're looking at gross margin, we're looking at net profit, and we're digging into the, you know, the P&L balance sheet and getting a good feel of like what cash flow looked like in the previous year. Then as we come into the leadership planning session, we are looking at more performance data. And so we're looking at a lot of comparison data. So we'll look at year over year for the past 3 years. So like what last year looked like. So let's say 2024, what 2023 looked like, what 2022 looked like. And we're looking for trends in that. And looking for something that, like, did we land a really big project that skewed the numbers last year compared to other years that we can't account? Because really all we're looking for is we're wanting to understand the data so we can forecast, forecast for the upcoming year, and hopefully be somewhat accurate in that. And so we look at year over year, then we'll look at the 2024, we'll look at monthly performance, and it's fairly high level, like what was the revenue, what was the gross margin, what was sales revenue versus production revenue, and just try to get a feel for the year. Obviously we're in Indianapolis, we cover some other areas in our commercial division, but it's seasonal, right? So we do 60% of our revenue in the second and third quarter. So there's definitely a seasonal nature. And so we got to be able to forecast and plan that, time our marketing to it. And so we're looking at that. We may look at quarter over quarter. So then we can say, hey, we know first quarter, we're only going to, you know, we can anticipate doing X, but it's going to triple in the second quarter. We're going to carry that into the third quarter. And then we're going to, you know, fall back a little bit again in the fourth quarter. So then we're able to, you know, play in our cash flow and play in our marketing and all that. So the beginning is just like looking at the data and trying to understand it and use it for forecasting. The other part of it is that's like, you know, kind of what the numbers tell a story. It's very logical. But then we're like, now how do we feel about what happened? And that goes to the gut, like what worked well last year, what didn't work well. And we share everyone's perspective, because it's like I have blind spots. I have what I focus in the business, and then we have other leaders are focusing other different things. So they always bring something that's like, I didn't even think of that, right? And so then we document what went well. And typically, if you're a high performer, typically you don't find yourself celebrating wins too well. It's just kind of like, I expect us to win, so we won. Let's move past it, but. For members of the team, it's important to take the time to celebrate those wins. So we get that documented, and then what didn't go well, we can tie into like our issues list. And so those are the issues that we need to start, and we need to prioritize. Like, we can't fix everything. We can't do everything, even though we want to. And so like we start the process of documenting an issues list and prioritizing what we think we can solve in that next year. Right. So now we've reviewed the financials, we reviewed the data, the performance data. We've talked about what we felt like went really well, what didn't go well, what were victories, what were losses. And that really starts to take us into planning the next year. But before, again, and so this goes back, what was the second part to your question? You said
getting bigger versus better, revenue versus profit, that type of thing. Right. How much?
Yeah. And I think that, so this ties better. So the next thing we do is we go to our vision sheet. And so on our vision sheet, we have what's our vision, what's our mission, we have something we call our pillars of success, what's our cultural virtues, and what's our company values, what's our 10-year aim, so that's that directional goal, what's 3 years look like, what's 5 years look like, and what's our high-level marketing strategy. So that's all on a vision sheet, so on one page of our planning document. And so to answer your question about the, you know, what's more important, like top line revenue or gross margin or net profit. I think it really depends on what's your vision. Like, and I don't think enough companies take the time to really think through this. And when you don't have an aim, it can create a lot of anxiety, right? You're lost in the desert. It's not that you don't have a direction to go, it's that you have too many directions. You literally, anywhere you can turn, you can walk, right? And so I think it's like, it's, you know, everyone's heard of every contractor is like, when they start out, it's like, I did everything for everybody. It's because I didn't have a direction. And you know, and so as you grow and evolve, you just like, this is where we're heading. This is who our customer is. These are the areas that we serve them. This is how we serve them, or the services that we offer. These are the type of people that we want in the company. The values, this is how we behave within the company. And so it just sets a direction, right? So to the answer to the question, it would be, it depends on where you're at in the company. If you're wanting to grow and scale, maybe you're a little more focused on that top line revenue and your gross margin. I think gross margin is a very, very important metric to follow for any contracting business, because if your margin's good, one, it's your insurance policy, because shit's gonna happen. Things are gonna come up. You're gonna have an expense, a cost, a mistake that you did not anticipate. So if you have good, healthy gross margin, it protects you as an organization. It protects your people. It also, like, your operating expenses, your payroll, your marketing, those are all controllables. Those are dials that we can turn. So if you have good, healthy gross margin, we can figure out, we can logically logically figure out how to improve our net profit, right? So it's like, so for me early on, it's the top line revenue, it's the gross margin. Now, if I was approaching an exit, I might be getting really serious about my net profit and my EBITDA and understanding that, like, how can I drive, show the most attractive profitability for if someone was looking to purchase me. So I think it just depends on what you're after at this stage of the business. But now obviously there's healthy benchmarks for all that, you know, and you want to make sure you are paying attention to all three of those, but maybe different times of the business, you're more focused on one or the other. So
that, I think you just gave us a really fantastic kind of encapsulation of goal setting in terms of high level goals for the company, how managers level up to that, and then of course how their individual employees level up to those higher level goals. And by the way, I mean, it sounds like you've got an excellent process in order for identifying those goals. My question is more along the lines of, how do you get buy-in from those employees who are going to execute that goal, especially considering that oftentimes they are going to regard it more as a punitive rubric, and it's going to can be a source of anxiety. So I've seen this over and over again at places. So I'd just love to hear how you get employee buy-in, and how do you get them to basically embrace the goals and not be afraid of the goals?
Yeah, great question. Our vision, mission, values in our organization is something that we talk a ton about. So we try to, I would say anyone in our company could recite those to anybody at any time. We work them into our meetings. It's something, because I feel like if people understand, like, what you're trying to accomplish, they understand the purpose of the business, they understand the why as much as the what and the how, you start to get that buy-in. But still, not everyone sees big picture, not everybody goes high level. So again, so we're taking that vision sheet as a part of our strategic planning that every employee gets. But then from there, it's our 1-year goals. From there, it's our quarterly goals or priorities. And then from there, this is the important piece, is they then set their goals. And the challenge is like, we would like you to set your 3 to 7 goals or priorities for the quarter. And we would like it to be within alignment with the company's goals. So how can you as an individual help move your divisions or your department or the company's goals forward? We really focus on that quarter, right? So we do the 2-day annual planning session, but then from there, the leadership team comes back together quarterly and does a version of that to reset the quarterly priority. So this is what we needed to do Q1 to move us towards our 2025 goals. This is what we need to do to Q2. This is what we need to do Q3, and this is what we need to do Q4. And ultimately, hopefully, we're moving closer to that 12-month goal. So the buy-in is like, so if I told you to do something, for me, you're going to be far more less motivated to do it if you decided to do something for you, right? So it's important that they are doing their own goal setting, and hoping that it's, or helping them find alignment to the company's goals. But there's far more ownership and buy-in if they know it's like, I've set this goal for myself, I have ownership and buy-in.
Man, Kevin, so many things to talk about. To what extent, what drives you, Chris? Like, what do you find personally fulfilling and satisfying? What charges your battery about owning and running your business? And I'm sure that's changed over time, but I would also think that that has to play a role in the goal setting, because certainly, you know, I think one of the early challenges and obstacles a contractor faces is, oh my God, I'm burning out because I'm doing everything, as you talked about earlier. And, you know, I guess this business is successful, but why am I working 70 hours a week? And obviously, it certainly sounds like you've evolved quite a bit. And so maybe it's easier to answer the question also from maybe 5, 7, 8 years ago, what drove you, but a desire to be personally fulfilled certainly should drive goal setting. So there you go. Another two-part question. What drives you now? And maybe when you were really first diving into goal setting at the beginning of your business, to what extent did it drive your goal setting?
Yeah. I would say I'm driven. I really love people. So I knew one point in my career, I found myself in an outside sales role. I had downtown Indianapolis was my territory. I was by myself all the time, cold calling every office suite you could think of downtown. And it's where the first time in my career, I wasn't around a team all the time. And it's the first time I realized, oh, I need that, right? So I've been very motivated to grow and scale my business because of two reasons. I want to surround myself with great people, and to build an organization that can have that, where we can bring a lot of really great people in, and make an impact for them and make an impact for our community. And then the second would be growth. So our current aim is building a $20 million painting contracting business. And it wouldn't be for the reason why you think, right? Again, I'm not overly motivated by finances. I'm excited about that journey because of the skills I know I'll have to acquire to reach it. And that last 10 years have taught me that. As again, back to your segue, is like, coming into this, I was like, I had owned a couple businesses, like as side hustles. So I felt like I knew what I was getting myself into. I had no idea. I was very naive. And it's but what I've loved about it is I've never been bored for a moment. I've loved the people I've been able to surround myself with and having a level of control on that. But I've really loved the growth I've been able to obtain because of the pressure that the business places on you. So I'm excited to see. I'm excited to grow our team, and I'm excited to grow myself personally and professionally. Generally speaking, I would like to do really good things and do it with a very high standard. That's kind of like the day-to-day motivator.
I think it's in some ways easy to set that top level goal of, we want to be a $5 million company. I think the real challenge is getting those individual contributors to get a good goal that ladders up, especially a measurable goal. So I'm curious, what do you think makes for a good goal at your company, and how do you measure the results?
Love it. Great question. So a goal can look two different ways for our company. So again, so those say you're at 500,000 and you say my immediate goal, my 3-year goal, my 10-year goal is 5 million, right? That's a directional goal. I wouldn't put a lot of detail behind it. It would just point me in a direction. But I would look at that, like when I'm doing my annual planning, and it's like, what do we got to do this year to move us towards 5 million? Right. And so then I like the 3 to 7 range. So let's just call it 5. What are 5 things that we can do this year? And so a goal for me can be either, it can be, the goal itself can be measurable, or it can be a theme. So, right, you could say a goal for us this year is to improve our customer service. well, that's not measurable. It's a bit subjective. So then we must attach key drivers or key objectives to make it measurable. So what are the 3 to 5 things we need to do that are very objective that would move us to improving our customer service? So like we want to deliver better product to our customer. So then you could say, we will do this by this. And now, you know, if you completed this and the next 3 items, then you accomplish that goal. So that's the way it typically looks for us. It's either a themed goal, and then it has some key drivers to it, or it's measurable in itself. It could be, we want to improve our net promoter score from 9.7 to 9.9 in this calendar year. And so then that would be a measurable goal that would be acceptable.
Man. So we're coming up, we're recording this in mid-January. So we're coming up on the PCA Expo, mid-January 2025, because of course, Paint Radio podcasts are listened to for decades. So
sure.
I need to include the year. I also love to talk about sort of benchmarks, areas where we grow individually, both in age, calendar age, year in the saddle in business. One of the, I think, most important opportunities for contractors to grow their business is to network. And I think that's one of the first thresholds, because a lot of people think, I don't need help. There aren't that many people who could help me. I'm not going to give my secrets to my competitor. Or like I said, or I'm just doing great. I'm good to go. I don't need help. And that goes back to the curiosity. I love your curiosity. I love your sincerity. You talk about how you love hanging out with people. So talk a bit about, and this isn't a plug for PCA Expo. It's, you know, join Kiwanis, join Better Business Bureau, join any, well, maybe not Better Business, join any networking group where you can learn from others, because there are so many unknown unknowns. There are so many things we don't know, lessons that we can learn, success that we haven't even imagined. And it's not about being type A. It's not about being driven like nobody else, because I think a lot of people also are like, good Lord, man, I would do that, but I don't burn hot like Chris. It's not about burning hot. It's about just having a desire to succeed and be fulfilled. And that might morph into, I really feel good when I provide a good job to somebody, or see that sparkle in somebody's eye that, boy, they feel great about what they did today, and I played a role in that. So what is your history with, in this case, PCA and Expo? How did you get involved? You know, is that something you came to immediately and initially, or did you have to sort of learn how to network?
Yeah. So networking is always something that I've prioritized, and I don't know if I was, if I knew why, and maybe it was just, I want to hang out with people. I don't know. But I've always done it. You know, it's funny, is like, you know, in Indianapolis, I built my network by, you know, coaching youth sports, and it wasn't to network, but I built a network through it. And we still do, like, I haven't coached in, you know, 10 years now, and we do jobs for people that, you know, I coached their children 10 years ago. And then I've done more, you know, obviously more professional networking. I serve on some boards, and so you build your network in all kinds of different ways. And it has been, it's been so impactful for my career. So anyways, but that's not, so it's funny how I actually came about the PCA is, in our first year of business, we, you know, was like, hey, how can we show some credibility here, right? And so I found the Painting Contracting Association, and we joined so we could put the badge on the website, right? And it's like, I don't know if I was what I planned to do with it, and if I planned to do anything, and eventually I saw promotion for the expo, and I was like, what the heck, give it a shot. But there was, you know, so the 2020 Phoenix Expo, like, literally, you know, I've said this before, and I don't say this type of phrase often, but was life-changing. Like, I met some relationships and made some friendships that, like, are some of my closest relationships today. And it was like, it's exactly what you said, Andrew. It's like, it's a weird thing. Cause like you can go to the expo for so many different reasons. You can go for the educational content. You can go to hang out with your buddies. You can go because you have a desire to contribute. And you can go because you want to build your network and, you know, be able to, collaborate with someone maybe in your market or out of your market. A ton of reason to go. For that one, for me, it was like, it was the, I formed a lot of close relationships that have grown over time and been very impactful to me and my business. And because of that, I got very motivated. I feel like we've been able to capture success in this industry. And I felt like I owed it back to further contribute. And so the PCA became a very obvious path to do that. So I joined the board of the PCA a couple of years ago. I'm excited to be the chair of the commercial committee this year. It's just been between the events and contributing at the board level has just been amazing, right? But to touch on the expo, the networking with peers is amazing. The one thing I think the PCA is really special, because there is a lot of different ways you can go about it in a lot of different places, but the PCA particularly, I feel like there is a culture and like I've never seen so many people willing to go somewhere and just share. And there's just like very, very little ego and just a lot of people that are very open and want to learn and grow together. The educational content is really, really good. The locations are always awesome. So, I mean, even if you just want to go for a vacation, it's pretty, pretty great thing. But you know, even beyond the expo, I think, I wanted to touch on this earlier, you know, it's like, if you don't have a leadership team developed and maybe you're going through your process of goal setting and annual planning, and the expo is somewhere you could definitely like bounce some ideas against some peers. But I also was like, part of my journey is I brought in a business coach, I joined a peer group. And those are really great ways that if you're not quite ready to have like a leadership team, that you can, you know, find advisory through a business coach or find advisory through a peer group or find advisory or collaboration at an event like the expo. So, you know, if you're not quite where you have people in your company, these are great ways that you can go still get someone else's perspective.
One last softball question. What are you looking forward to most at expo, and where are we going to get a drink?
Okay. Easy question. Hanging out with you two. And second easy question, I don't know the name of the bar, but supposedly there's like an English pub that was relocated from England to this hotel. Is that true? Do you guys know of this?
It's called the Golden Bee, because if listeners don't know, I live a mile and a half from, and all three of my kids have worked at the Broadmoor, which is the resort where the expo is going to be held. And yes, there's, if you like Scotch eggs or ales or sing along with a piano player, you're going to love the Golden Bee.
Sign me up.
Man, Chris Elliott, this has been a blast. One thing I want to echo, because again, I'm sort of steering my input, my comments to people who maybe haven't broken out of their shell yet, who are really just sort of in the business too much and they need to break out. One great way to do that, something you mentioned, join a committee, join a board, whether it's at your kid's school, the local downtown partnership. There's just the committee on open spaces in your local government. There are so many boards and committees out there who need people on it. It's amazing. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody. This isn't about getting into politics. I've never talked to anyone who said that was a waste of my time, because especially if you're new to it, it's going to gain you exposure to just that whole new way of operating and a whole new way of thinking, networking with people. And it can also really reinvigorate your, if you're not naturally a people person, joining a committee or board can reignite your faith in society and people. And then that can absolutely snowball into, I could run my business this way too.
It's such an incredible point.
Thank you, Chris. Chris Elliott, president and CEO of Onnit Painting in Indianapolis. If anyone listening is going, to the PCA Expo in beautiful Colorado Springs and you see Chris, I'm going to go ahead and volunteer you, Chris, that you would be happy to meet some new folks. And if you want to learn about Chris or learn about the PCA or just share a little bit of your story, I bet you'd be open to hearing that, wouldn't you, Chris?
100%.
Awesome. We love what we do at APC. I always say it because I always mean it, and it's always true. Go to paintmag.com. It's a form of networking. Granted, you're not communicating with people, but man, there's so many stories about fellow painting contractors, people who have faced and have overcome some of the exact same challenges that you're facing, because this is a people industry and there are so many solutions. Nobody suffers alone. There's so much opportunity for fulfillment. That's why we love doing what we do, because I believe in media. Yes, APC exists to be a profitable company, but the reason we're profitable is because we help painting contractors find greener pastures and run a better business and find greater fulfillment. So if you think that's a line, it's not a line. It's just the sincerity that beats inside Andrew Dwyer, and that's me. Thanks for listening to Paint Radio. Go to paintmag.com. If I see you in Colorado Springs and if you see me, please say hello. I won't hug you until we say goodbye. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody.